Welcome back to Relatively Damaged by Damaged Parents. Today we have Michelle Steiner with us. She lives with an invisible disability. She has articles published on the Mighty, Nonverbal Learning Project, Dyscalculia Blog, The Reluctant Spoonie, Calopina Collective, and Imagine the World as One magazine and World Gathering. She has had her photographs featured in Word Gathering. She's had her photographs featured in Word Gathering and Independent and Work Ready. She works as a paraeducator in a school with students with disabilities. She lives in Pennsylvania with her husband and two cats. You can find her at her blog, Michelle's Mission, which is michellesmission.blog. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Relatively Damaged by Damaged Parents. We really enjoyed talking to Michelle about how she found out she could do hard things with a disability. We especially liked when she spoke about making sure to use her accommodations so she could be successful. To unite with other damaged people, connect with us on Instagram. Look for Damaged Parents. We'll be here next week, still relatively damaged. See you then. Michelle. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Angela. I appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. I was just telling you before the recording started for the podcast, how excited I am to have someone on or here with your particular struggles. Do you want to tell the listeners a little bit about that?
Sure, I would be happy to. I have a learning disability. I have dyscalculia. And that is the math learning disability. A lot of people are familiar with dyslexia, the reading disability, but not too many people are very familiar with what that involves. And with that, basically having dyscalculia involves I'm not being able to understand how numbers work.
Okay, so would it be even just adding and subtracting? Is it not recognizing the numbers or not understanding how one, like for instance, if 4 minus 2, would it be not understanding what the 4 and the 2 do to each other?
Right. Well, I am not, I am able to see numbers. Definitely. I know that the 4 and the 2, if you take them away, I'm able to understand that, but it's difficult for me simply to figure out a lot of just calculating them correctly, having a number sense. I can remember, being a really young child, it was difficult for me to count and to do just a lot of the basic math things, like remembering math facts. We did a lot of those facts with memorizing the multiplication table. Well, there's still a lot of facts I can't tell you offhand. I mean, I obviously can do very basic ones. And there's other parts of that it goes beyond just not being able to understand a lot of advanced math. I can't read the face of a clock when you give me an analog clock. My brain does not understand how it works. I can usually tell if I have, like, let's say I know that I look at my Fitbit, I know it's 9 o'clock and somebody has a clock hanging up on the wall. Okay, I can see where the numbers are going. But if I would wake up in the middle of the night, or if I would just go into a room and not know what time I was starting at, I couldn't give you an accurate time beyond what that time is. So I use my Fitbit and my phone, and we have everything digital at our house. So that helps to be able to know that. But it also goes beyond with some other things that come up, like my right, I mix up my right and my left a lot of times. So when I get new shoes, I can't tell you what shoe's the right shoe or the left shoe.
Okay, so when you say mixing up the right and the left, it's not just, if you're the one saying which way you're going to turn next in a car, and you might say right to turn left or left to turn right, and then realize a mistake is made as soon as the car goes the wrong way, but you wouldn't know it before it.
Right, and that's one of the things with me not being able to drive. It's not with my eyes, it's with my brain. And the reaction time in the visual perception. And then you have the right and the left. So that confusion can be really difficult.
Now, as you were growing up, did you, you you sense that you had this? I mean, did you know early on?
Yes, I knew very, my family and I knew very early on. When I was in preschool, my teacher thought something was a little bit different, but I was my parents' first child, so they didn't have a whole lot to base development on. So when I went into kindergarten, it was really hard for me. I was really struggling socially with other kids just to make friends. And a lot of that was I grew up around adults. And it also, you know, it was hard because I wasn't picking up on academic concepts. So, and the academic part was another thing I struggled with. And my kindergarten teacher noticed that too. And she recommended getting tested for a learning disability. And what I remember is I would do a dot to dot page and I thought, oh, I did a really great job on this. And it turns out, well, it wasn't connected correctly. And I know that that sounds like the easiest thing that you can do, but for me, that was tough. And my handwriting was difficult. My eye-hand coordination was really hard, really difficult at that age. And they tested me, and sure enough, I had a learning disability. And it was a pretty grim picture. My parents remember when I got the diagnosis. They pretty much said that I wasn't going to have a lot of success at life. And the only thing they got right was I was never going to understand numbers. And that was really hard for my dad because my dad's pretty good at math and he just, okay, 1 + 1 = 2. How can I have a child that just is not going to be able to understand that, which I do know basic, but, just, you know, it's one of those concrete things that I just don't, they just had a hard time in the beginning, but what we decided to do was I was going to repeat kindergarten in a new school in our district. And I was going to, that year, I was going to start receiving support services with specialty instruction. And I can remember it was even really hard in the beginning too with getting that instruction. I mean, I was spent a great deal of my childhood being very frustrated. My parents were wonderful. They never gave up on me, but I wanted to be like just all the other kids. I wanted to be able to go and learn and make friends and be able to read. And it just, it was really difficult for me, but eventually the specialty instruction helped. I was able to be in regular classes for, I think they started with social studies and science and a little bit of reading. But I was always in the learning support for math and for resource because those are the services that I really needed to have.
Now, I'm thinking with that these challenges also came an identity, like what you said. It was really hard for your dad because he was really good at math, and mm-hmm. here you weren't. Did that identity? It sounds like it impacted dad, but how did it impact you?
It was really hard with trying to figure out how I fit into the picture with having a math disability, because in the learning support classroom, a lot of my peers, they had more reading based disabilities. So they didn't view me as smart. And some of them had some really behavior issues as well. And some pretty sad family dynamics that was going on in their house. So they weren't always the kindest to me. So I really didn't feel like, well, I identify with the other learning support peers. And then the regular ed peers, they didn't accept me as one of them. They lumped me together with the learning support peers. So that was really hard. And it was just very difficult. And it got even harder as I went throughout school socially. Academically, it got a little bit, it got easier. I was able to get really good grades. I was in more regular classes, but the social aspect was really difficult. So I did kind of go through, well, do I really have a disability? I knew I had a disability, but everybody just thought, oh, it's reading. And the only reading issues I had were reading comprehension. So yeah, it was difficult to wrap mm-hmm. my head around that.
Yeah. And then feeling like you didn't fit in mm-hmm. any place. What was that That sounds really horrible.
It was. I mean, it was terrible, especially as I got older. Just trying to go throughout school and just be able to get the information and getting bullied, that was really hard going through school and being rejected and not even have a lot of the learning support peers that liked me. And I can remember what did help was I started hanging out with people that were in a neighboring school district. And there was a teen art program. And when I got involved with that, I found out, okay, I don't have this reputation of being the screw up or the dumb one that I had since kindergarten. I was, you know, who I was, and people were really accepting. And I did get to tell them, oh, I have a learning disability. And most of the experience was rather positive. And that in turn encouraged me to reach out to other people. And I had older friends that I still am friends with today. And it's, you know, our friendships are past 20 years. So that was one of the nicest things that I did, I think, was going there, because that shed that reputation from that.
Yeah, it sounds like by stepping out of the environment in which you identified as this person with these disabilities and mm-hmm. didn't feel like part of it, and going into a different environment, that yep. then you were able to find, would self-esteem be a good word to use there? Or good words?
Yes, because I was able to do something that I was good at, because writing has always been a passion of mine. So I found other people my age, oh, they like to write, and they like to do things, and they didn't know me. And that made me, I was able to not have that. And I was able to get that self-esteem is, okay, well, wait a minute. Because I wonder, oh, what's wrong with me? Why don't other people like me? And of course, there were things that I did. I'm certainly not perfect, but I would just wonder, well, what was wrong with me? And then when I finally found other people in my life, that it wasn't all me. It was just that reputation that everybody kind of goes through. And the school that I grew up in, it wasn't a very diverse school to begin with. And they liked you in that close-knit community if you were one of them. And with having a disability, I really wasn't, I didn't feel like I was one of them. And it was hard to hide too. I couldn't, everybody knew everybody's business. They knew you went to learning support. Even in the regular ed classes, if I had a test, one of my accommodations was getting the test read aloud to me and having the extended test time. And they knew where I was going. And so that was hard.
Would you say that some of it had to do with how you viewed yourself and some of it had to do with how they viewed you, or how you thought, oh, what, there's a quote, I think it's by Samuel Beckett. I am who you think I am, or something like that.
Right. I think it was, it was a mixture of both, because I even find it funny today when I run into people that I went to school with. Either I really remember you if you were mean to me, or I remember if you were nice. And then I figure if I don't know who you are, then you must have left me alone. And the thing is, I wish those people that I don't remember, I wish I wouldn't have been so afraid and I would have reached out, because I think there would have been a lot more friendships and there would have been a lot more in common with other people. So some of it was my own self on how I viewed myself after having a lot of negative experiences, like with having a disability and just how other people treated me. And some of it was just how other people saw me too.
So how, beyond going to the art class, like how did you find your strengths that you have?
I definitely found my strength. My parents read to me, my dad especially, when I was little. So I grew up loving books. And I think even with having issues with reading comprehension, I grew up to love reading. And that, I think, is what saved me, because I was always had a friend with having a book, and I always loved to write. And I think I can remember my parents finding the first story I wrote about a dinosaur. I think it was in second or third grade. And they said how good it was. And I was like, wow, I finally found something that I'm good at, because everything else was just such a struggle. And just being able to write was always something that I enjoyed doing. So that's one way that I found some strengths, that the things that I was good at.
Mm-hmm. So it really helped for them to focus on the strengths
that
you had. And it sounds like you also took that as, oh, this is something I'm good at. I'm going to focus on this. How hard was it to, or how easy did you find it to slip into writing then after that?
Oh, it was really easy. Everybody knew, even at school, my peers knew, oh, she's always writing, or she always has a book. Definitely. They always knew that I liked to read and that I liked to write. So that was really easy for me to go into that.
And then that's a lot of what you do today. Now, you said, or when I read the introduction, it was, there's some photographs. How did you get into doing photographs or pictures?
You know, that was one of those things where I just started to take pictures of things, because I knew that they always said about people with learning disabilities that they're really good with art. And with my hand dexterity issues, it's really hard for me to draw and to be able to do a lot of those fine motor skills details. So I was always like, oh, I'm a little frustrated with that. And I remember having a friend who was really good at that. And he told me, you know, you're going to be able to do this. You're going to do this. And no, I don't think so. And then my husband, we have an iPad, and then we had our phones, and I just started taking pictures of things that I would see when we would go out on some of our adventures. I would take pictures of flowers, and people would say, wow, those are really good photos. I think the first one, we were at a wedding, and we went to, it was around Halloween, we went to a cemetery, and we took some angel pictures. And I had a friend that never, she was pretty honest about things. If she didn't like something, or she did, and she looked at me and said, these are really good. And I thought, oh, if this made it, that impressed her, then they must be pretty good. And I remember entering them into an art show. And I think I placed, maybe got an honorable mention for one of them. So I'm like, oh, this is really neat. And that just encouraged me to start taking pictures and to do that. And I can just remember, and then people would tell me, you can bring out details that I can't see. And I thought, oh, that might be the visual part of having a learning disability that a lot of people talk about. And I get that opportunity to do that because I'm not able to drive. So of course my husband's concentrating on the road, and I get to see these really neat things. And later on, if I don't have a ride to be able to go somewhere and I have to walk, I'll sometimes be able to get that opportunity to think, oh, that we saw that on the ride to work, or I'll find another detail and I get to capture that.
Oh, wow. Okay. I have a really, you cannot answer it. It's okay.
Okay.
the question is, what was it like finding a husband with all these struggles, you know, and these challenges, and how did you overcome that?
It was difficult to find the right person. I have had people that couldn't accept that I had a disability, and that was a big factor for them. And I finally got to the point where I just said, God, I'm just, don't bring me anybody until it's the right person. And I wasn't even thinking about it when I met him. I was volunteering at an art center, and he was going there. I was walking down the street, and he saw me, and he wondered where I was going. And it turns out, we were both going to the same place. He was going to play guitar that night, and I was volunteering, and he went in there, and we knew mutual friends. So that was something. And we just had this relationship that just, we started out as friends, and it developed about a couple months later. And I can remember even telling him I think it was our first date, and I told him I had a learning disability, and he asked me, well, how does that make you feel? And that was the first person that ever asked me that question, the one to have a relationship with me. And we've had some learning curves. I mean, there's been some things that he may not be aware of with having a disability, but we've been able to work those things out.
So when you met him at that point in time, you had said, don't bring me anybody unless they're, you know, period. Yeah. Like, had you in a way accepted the disability, or what happened?
Right. To make me accept. I was still in the process of accepting it. I was at university, and I was in a really good program that, that I wanted to be at. It was about learning the service end of special ed. So I was starting to accept that, and I was doing pretty well with things. But and that being at the university too was something that was definitely an accomplishment, because I was told that I wouldn't go beyond a community college by a psychiatrist. So that was in my late 20s when I met him, and I still wasn't quite there 100%. But what led me to accept my disability is when I was able to get that bachelor's degree, despite people telling me, well, you're never going to be able to do it. And I thought, oh, I can do this. And I still have the disability. I mean, you know, degrees, having college degrees haven't taken that away. Doing accommodations, that doesn't take it away. Just those are ways that I'm able to compensate for having a disability. But I can just remember that sense of pride when I got that degree. And that just, that just really healed a lot of it. But what really did a lot of the healing was when I started writing about it, because writing has always been my passion, as I said before. And I was in a writer's group, and I can remember I had a friend that was telling me, you should really write about having a learning disability. And I thought, oh, I don't know. I think I just want to run and hide from having it. But when I first started writing about it, and I got that first article published on the Mighty, it was the most healing thing I think I ever did. And
okay, what made it so healing?
It made it healing to be able to put on paper, this is who I am, and not to care if somebody else found out that I had a disability. Because I didn't get people that were going to run and hide or have a lot of mean things to say. I have found a lot of people that have said, that's my story, or I struggle with that. And just hearing that validation and having that connection was a very healing process too.
Yeah. So with the graduating from from college, from university, it sounds like that might have been a point at which you were able to say, oh, I can do hard things.
Exactly. Yes, I can, because we had to go through even at that level. I mean, I already had my associate's degree, so I had an understanding that if I got an F on a test, or if I got a D in a class, it wasn't the end of the world. I understood that you can still bounce back from that, and how to talk to professors and things like that. And I also knew going in to definitely use the accommodations, because I didn't use them because of the stigma. So when I got that degree, it did make me feel like, yes, I can do hard things. I'm able to go out and to do this, as long as it's the right program for me, with a lot of research and a lot of accommodations. I can do a lot of things.
I'm wondering how much, because I think having, at least for me, having a disability is it, there's this real sense of being alone, and that I was the only one who struggled all of that great stuff. This is before the podcast started.
Right.
But I, you know, as I'm thinking about people with disabilities, any disability, you know, it's what I'm hearing from you is so many people, there were always so many people around to try and help. But was that like in school, because I didn't have the help in school and things like that, was that helpful or hurtful that they were capable people helping? Or would it have been more helpful if they had voiced that they had a struggle? Do you see where I'm going? Like, kind of my question. I'm not sure what the exact question is, but maybe it's like, what would it have been like, or what do you think it would have been like if someone else was trying to help you and they had a disability? Not unlike what you're doing now, right? Because that's what you do.
That would have made a world of difference. I can remember whenever we were trying to figure out, oh, what am I going to do after high school? And I knew that I wanted to do college. And I can remember I had a learning support teacher that said, I don't think you can do it because of your math. And she recommended a trade school. And I knew I didn't want to do that. And there was a student teacher, though, that was really encouraging. And she goes, you can do college. And I remember hearing that thinking, I can't do that. I have a disability. And she told me, you know how to study. And she also said, there are students at the university that have disabilities. And they take remedial classes and they're able to be there. And that was so eye-opening for me to be able to hear that, because I knew of very few people that had disabilities that were able to be successful. I think I can remember hearing a story about one person, but I never met that person. And it just, a lot of them were like reading disabilities. And I didn't know anybody that, oh, they struggle with math, or they struggle with that and were able to go to college. And I don't remember the student teacher's name, but when I finally went to college, being a community college for the first time, having it being very difficult, sometimes her voice is what I heard when things got really tough, that, okay, I can do this. I can be able to handle that.
Mm-hmm. Well, so it sounds like when things got really hard that you went mm-hmm. back to remembering that conversation or other validating yes. conversations. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like also that there was a disproportionate amount of invalidating conversations of saying, you can't do this. And
right. Yeah.
Did you get through those? Right. Cause I would think on some level, like my balloon would have been popped, you know?
It was really difficult. I mean, I would say that it was very discouraging for me. And I probably wasn't the most positive person for a lot of years. And I really struggled. And I think I struggled with trying to put on this persona that, oh, everything is just great. And I don't need to have accommodations and I can do this on my own. And I just crashed when that happened. I can remember my grades were falling and it was really difficult not having that, because people would tell me, well, you can do better, or your job choices will be limited. And the thing that I had to remember was just to go forward with what I knew was right, and just to keep on moving forward and keeping looking for things that work and using them and trying to shut off the negative voices that would come up, and the people that would try to tell me, mostly helpful people that would say, things like, well, you could do this or you could do that. And nothing really just gave me the direction that I wanted to go with my life and knowing what I wanted to do and finding a way to do it.
So it really wasn't helpful that these people that were trying to be helpful were giving mm-hmm. you their opinion on what you should do instead of really having a conversation with you about it.
Exactly. Right. They had some ideas like, well, maybe you could stock shelves. Well, that's not always the most appropriate choice. I mean, in some cases it would be, or, well, you can do better, or you can try, you know, it's like, well, I need to have, I can, if I do the accommodations, and to encourage me to use those would have been a more productive conversation.
So even at the other end of the spectrum, mm-hmm. you can do this, you can do better, like that hard push instead mm-hmm. of, you know, what are you struggling with or how can I help you?
Right.
It was just, so it at either end of that spectrum, it can be super hurtful from emotionally because.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, a lot of people just simply don't understand, too, what learning disabilities are. A lot of times when people see me, because I don't look like I'm disabled, they'll be like, oh, well, you don't look like you have a disability. Or if I tell them I have a math disability, they'll say, well, doesn't everybody have a math disability?
Oh, shoot.
Yeah.
Ouch.
I'm like, well, I mean, I understand it's common for people to struggle with math, but there's a difference between just being bad at it and having something that they can diagnose you like with when you go in, and having that long history of it.
Yeah.
And
so
I
it would
think,
be helpful if they instead ask maybe something like, what does that mean for you?
Right. What does it mean for you? Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. I think that's important that we put that in here, because we've talked about the put downs and we've talked about the trying to prop ups that weren't working. And I want to really try and get an idea, you know, give to the audience, here are some tools. So with that being said, what would be like your top three tips or tools that you would say, you know what, if you come across someone and they reveal to you that they've got an invisible disability, maybe think about this.
I think one of the things that I would say is to definitely listen to them and to ask questions. That's important. That's important too. Ask them about their disability. If they want to answer, they may not want to give every little last detail, but ask them what they're comfortable with sharing. And if they tell you that, and most importantly, to listen to the person and to try not to judge. I think sometimes we get an idea in our head of what certain disabilities are. And until you really talk to the person, you don't get an idea of what it is like. Because when you meet one person that has a learning disability, that's simply one person.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think just love them for who they are and where they're at. I think with a disability sometimes too, it's really hard to be okay with, for me anyway, it was really hard to be okay with myself. And then if I felt the judgment from either end of the spectrum, you know, it's just, maybe the best way to say it is love the soul, right?
Exactly. Love the soul, love them for where they're at, not for where you want them to be or where you think they should be at. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Michelle, for coming
Thank
on the
you.
Show. Oh, it's been so fun. And I've loved getting to talk about the disability. I just want to make sure that I point them again to your blog, which is michellesmission.blog.
Yes.
And you can also find her on Facebook. Are you on any other social medias?
Yeah. Instagram, M Steiner S 7259. Yep.
Oh, awesome. Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.